Last week, CBS announced that Stephen Colbert, who satirically portrays a political blowhard on Comedy Central, will succeed David Letterman as the host of the network's late-night show. And this time, Stephen Colbert will play himself, a stranger to most of the viewing public since Colbert has always presented as a character on Comedy Central. So how do we feel about this? We'll hear what David Zurawick thinks as the Baltimore Sun's media critic joins us for another edition of Midday on Media, and we invite your calls. Plus, it's the beginning of the end for Mad Men. Is it the beginning of the end for House of Cards in Maryland? Midday on Media with David Zurawick after the news from NPR. And welcome back to Midday, everyone, our second hour. Dan Roderick's here. It's time again for Midday on Media with my colleague from Calvin Street, the Baltimore Sun's media critic, David Zurawick. David, nice to see you.
Nice to be back.
Here's what we have on the agenda today. The beginning of the end of AMC's Mad Men, which began its final season Sunday night. We're also going to talk about this very interesting new FX series, Fargo,
yep,
which is based on the 1996 Coen Brothers film,
yep,
Fargo. Get an update from you on House of Cards. The General Assembly wrapped up, was it last week?
Yeah, last week.
Still want to talk a little bit about this, the struggle to keep this Netflix production in Maryland. And this is interesting. Conservative pundits, real and fake. First, a real one. Former Reagan speechwriter and Fox News contributor Laura Ingraham has been added to ABC News' roster of contributors. We're going to talk about that. It's raised some eyebrows. Stephen Colbert, who plays a pundit,
sort of a conservative blowhard pundit
on Comedy Central, now is going to play himself in David Letterman's chair when David Letterman gives up his seat on the late night show of CBS. So we've got all that to talk about. One quick thing right off the top, local story that David has today. Yesterday, posted in the Baltimore Sun, and it's on BaltimoreSun.com today, but Don Scott at WJZ-TV, been there, seems like forever, and then the last several years on the morning show, he announced that he's retiring.
Yeah, he announced it. Actually, last week I was off, and he announced it on his Twitter, and he announced it in social media. And when I came back this week, I just didn't see any stories or anything about it. Then I saw it, checked with Jay-Z, and, you know, they sent me the statement they put out last week after, apparently, after the general manager read it on Twitter.
But Don, so, Don's been there a long time.
Yeah, it is a long time. You know, it's interesting. There is a, you know, I think to some extent, there is a little bit of a changing of the guard to be expected over there. You know, Kye Jackson left to go to Sinclair.
Mm-hmm.
He's a national correspondent for Sinclair in D.C. Expectation is once the one-year non-compete ends, you're going to see him on Fox 45. And that's going to be a formidable challenge to Jay-Z if he's on Fox 45. Adam May left for
Al Jazeera America.
A good promotion for a really good reporter. But he was a weekend anchor there. And now Scott leaving. And I'll tell you one of the things, my sense of Jay-Z's audience, and this is in no way to characterize its whole audience, but, you know, they and BAL have been one and two forever, it seems, in this market in terms of overall numbers. And my sense was that people who liked a traditional sense of Baltimore liked that station. Now, some people say old Baltimore and it's a bad thing. And I don't necessarily see it that way. And I don't feel that way about it. But that anchor, that, you know, when you get into Marty Bass, Don Scott, those people, that's an older team. So you should, and Denise too.
Denise Koch.
Yeah. You should expect a changing of the guard. In some ways, I think they might have a kind of rebuilding challenge over there in this transition. I'm not saying it's happening this minute, but over the course of the next year or so. And the good news for them is they're CBS owned. So CBS can feed talent into that place. And they do. You see people spin right out of there and go to NBC, CBS national jobs, or CBS New York at least.
The longevity is impressive there. Yeah. And it's intentional. It's direct.
Right.
And it's been effective for them.
Yeah. So you could see a different kind. It depends how they handle it. You know, if I was the general manager, if I was Jay Newman over there, I'd be thinking this is going to take a lot to get this right, because you want to get new talent, but you don't want to just get great out-of-town talent. You have to have a sense of Baltimore identity. And, Dan, as you know, I think better than me about it, this market, I think, has a particular love of its past, in a way. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Baltimore history is treasured by its residents in a way that I think a lot of cities don't have that kind of pride in their past, you know? So you better have people connected to this city in some ways. That's why I think you can have a longer career in a city like Baltimore than, you know, I was going to pick a name out of a club, but I don't know. Well, I don't live there. But I think
you're right about it. Yeah. Look at the Don Scott line, if you will, at WJZ goes back to the time of Jerry Turner and Al Sanders.
Yes, thank
That's
you.
That's how long he's been there. Marty Bass as well, right?
Yeah.
So and Bob Turk,
the
meteorologist. You know, there's a long line there. So those folks who remember Al Sanders, Jerry Turner, know that these were like their kids, basically.
But you know, it's a funny
descendants.
It's a funny thing because one of I was just only because I was teaching this to class this week on soap operas. One of the challenges of soap operas is to hold your older audience, but attract a new generation of viewers. And that's been a big challenge from the 20s and 30s when they were on radio. 1920s and 30s.
Oh, we know what you're talking
new
generation.
About. But it's funny that in Baltimore, that's the challenge of news, is to hold your base older audience and attract a new generation. And that's tougher because you have like three competitors. A newspaper here, we have competitors, but we're really the game, you know? So it's easier for us to find ways to do that online. I don't know if I was a TV station with three competitors. That would be a daunting task.
Let's talk about a CBS National story. We'll jump from WJZ to CBS National. Here's David Letterman announcing his retirement on The Late Show Thursday, April 3rd.
Earlier today, the man who owns this network, Leslie Moonves, he and I have had a relationship for years and years and years. And we've had this conversation in the past, and we agreed that we would work together on this circumstance and the timing of this circumstance. And I phoned him just before the program, and I said, Leslie, it's been great. You've been great. The network has been great. But I'm retiring.
This is really?
Yep.
This is true. This is you actually did this?
Yes, I did.
Wow. Well, do I have a minute to call my accountant? Because
it's Paul Schaefer there.
So it's I just want to reiterate my thanks and for the support from the network, all of the people who have worked here, all of the people in the theater, all the people on the staff, everybody at home. Thank you very much. And what this means now is that Paul and I can be married.
Now, CBS acted quickly and directly and announced the replacement for David Letterman would be Stephen Colbert. Here's Colbert in character, as always, addressing Letterman's retirement on his own Colbert Report on Comedy Central 8 days later.
There was some big news last week that slipped through my news crack. And it concerns someone I've admired for years and yet surprisingly is not me. I'm talking about David Letterman, who last Thursday night announced his retirement. And I am going to miss this good man. Dave has been on the air my entire adult life. Late Night debuted my first year in college. I learned more from watching Dave than I did from going to my classes. Especially the ones I did not go to because I had stayed up until 1:30 watching Dave. This man has influenced every host who came after him and even a few who came before him. He's that good. And I gotta tell you, I do not envy whoever they try to put in that chair.
So it's going to be Stephen Colbert. And Stephen Colbert, who most of us know as Stephen Colbert of the Colbert Report, Dave, is going to play himself on TV. And I'm not as familiar with him. I'm not familiar at all with that Stephen Colbert.
Yeah, you know, first of all, I think what's fascinating to me is everybody connected with this change is lying their butts off, number one. So let me start there with my normal take on this. You've got David Letterman saying, so I just phoned them before I stepped out here, folks, and told them I'm leaving. And then lo and behold, within a week, they've got a new host. Do you know how complicated that contract has to be? If Swifty Lazar at his height could not have negotiated that contract in 1 week.
And by the way, conveniently, Colbert's contract with Comedy Central ends, I guess, this year anyway,
yes.
Right?
And that's what I think happened here. That's the real story. I think Les Moonves was interested in Colbert as the replacement. They had talks off campus, as they say, about this for maybe a year or so. The contract came up. Here was the window where they could do it. Moonves goes to Letterman, says, Dave, you and I have been talking about this for a while. You said you're going to do it in the next year or two. I got a chance to sign the guy we want. Can we do this the right way? You know?
Mm-hmm.
And Letterman, Letterman's been burned out on that show for a while now. He just doesn't, you know, when they bring a CBS, like a new comedy comes out, he doesn't even feign like he cares about it anymore, you know? So I think that's the real story. You do not negotiate. And you know what kills me? This kills me, Dan. You know, the reporting on show business at newspapers, all the way up to New York Times.
Right.
Is absolutely awful. Nobody's raised this question. How did he get that contract together in a week? How did this all fall? Oh, God, the stars aligned. We don't repeat it. Isn't that interesting? They found him in a week.
Right.
We're really, the level of show business reporting in this internet age is just dreadful. They're lucky if they don't get it wrong. They get it right, it's one in a million chance they get it right. So I think that's the real story of what went on there. I have to tell you, in terms of Colbert as Colbert, I don't know much more than you do, and I don't know. Here's the best thing I can say about this. Les Moonves, not one of my favorite people in the world, but he's a really smart showman, and he pulled this Letterman thing off. I remember when that all happened. He handled that, and he set up.
You mean he got him from NBC?
Brought him in and made it work. You know what I'm saying? Remember that, all that craziness?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. He brought it in and made it work. Made it financially work for CBS. So I think that's the best thing I can say about it. I will trust Moonves' instincts that he picked the right guy for a few months, but I have no reason to say that. I don't have any reason to say Colbert's brilliant. You know, when Colbert and Jon Stewart did that Rally in Washington show, I thought it was moronic. I thought it was the stupidest show in the world. Both of them looked like fools, you know? Of course, the Jon Stewart devotees would never say Jon could look like a fool, but Colbert really looked stupid. Punching at Uncle Sam pinata and that. It's just stupid stuff.
Yeah.
So, you know, you look at that and you
that
go.
That might have been their low point.
I think it was their low
point. They have a lot of high points.
Oh, yeah, but I've read, you know.
So my question is, what about the real Colbert hosting a show who's not that character that Americans really like?
You know what? My answer is, I don't know if he'll do that. But as I was thinking about that when it happened, I thought, you know what? Just like almost everything else in the media these days, late night is not what it used to be. He doesn't have to be great. There's never going to be another Johnny Carson, somebody who owns that genre the way he does.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, how good is Jimmy Fallon on NBC? Every few weeks or months, he has a great musical, a brilliant musical sketch. But in terms of his interviewing,
And also, I wonder, what are the ratings like? Do you have any read on
that? That's a smaller audience, too. And so now you get...
Because you can get the highlights the next day digitally. You know, you don't need to stay up and watch that show.
I mean,
I noticed that in this whole field of late night talent, there's no women.
No, that's
they're all white men, as a matter of fact.
That's us. If we're picking the CBS thing now and we're saying, hey, look, this is much more a niche market. It's nobody's going to dominate. You know, let's just get a piece of the pie here, enough to make money in this time period. And let's try to do something good. Let's see if we can bring a woman into this. That's my first impulse. There's women out there. You can go, you could go Ellen.
Yeah, sure.
You could go Amy Schumer if you want to shake them up and get boys to watch.
Mm-hmm, right.
You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Amy can do the nightclub comic thing. I don't think she can do the 60-year-old guy in his pajamas.
But in this case, it doesn't look like anybody got a chance other than Colbert. I mean, according to your scenario, which is completely logical to me, nobody else got a shot at this.
This was a done deal,
And I just wonder from our listeners who are grown used to the Colbert Report on Comedy Central, how do you feel about the real Stephen Colbert? I guess you'll tune in to see what this is like. But is he going to be as funny as he has been as that character on Comedy Central?
Yeah, and in that context of that Comedy Central world and Jon Stewart, it's a very different context for a mainstream audience. And I'll tell you what, if he doesn't attract part of that mainstream audience, their numbers are going to look really, really bad. But, you know, you look at it, it's Kimmel, Fallon, him. You know, this is not going to be, this is, the giants are not walking the earth at late night anymore.
David Zurawick is with us again, paying his monthly visit to Midday, Midday on Media. You're welcome to join in and answer that question. You think this is a good move, Stephen Colbert, to take Letterman's spot? 410-662-8780. Stephen Colbert, you want to call in, use our toll-free number, 866-661-9309. Our Midday email address, midday@wypr.org, with your comments. When we get back, we'll talk some more about this, and then we'll move on to some of those other subjects that I mentioned earlier, the beginning of the end of Mad Men, House of Cards, does it stay in Maryland in production, and Laura Ingraham going to ABC News as a contributor on This Week. We'll be right back with Dave. Hey, let's drop this in. This is David's latest from the Baltimore Sun, baltimoresun.com. Elijah Cummings under increasing fire from conservative media on IRS. This is the IRS. The investigations have been going on about the IRS field office in Cincinnati that conducted audits of nonprofits, some including Tea Party-affiliated groups. And this has been a battle that's been going back and forth between Elijah Cummings on his House committee with the chairman of that committee, Daryl
Issa,
Republican of California. So what's going on, David? Just a little bit on this.
Issa released some emails, and Fox News really picked up on them and is hammering this day and night. Monday night on Megyn Kelly, Tuesday morning on Fox and Friends. Fox, of course, Elizabeth Hasselbeck, shocking new revelations is, you know, that kind of language.
Mm-hmm.
But what they're claiming is that the emails show Cummings staff members on the committee contacting Lois Lerner, the woman under fire at the IRS who has since stepped down and pled the fifth.
Invoked the fifth,
saying that they inquired of her about this Texas conservative group called True the Vote and, in essence, put them on the radar for the IRS, targeted it. So their allegation, and it is an allegation that's totally denied by, you know, by Cummings' office, is that they were working essentially hand in glove with the IRS to target opponents, really, of Barack Obama in 2012 in that election cycle. And now he's on the committee.
The House Oversight Committee.
Top minority member of the committee,
mm-hmm.
investigating it. So that's a conflict. The counter argument that so far has only been presented yesterday online by Mother Jones is that the staffers from that committee, in fact, targeted, contacted the IRS long before that and legitimately asked only for information available to the public about this group and other groups.
Okay.
So
Fox doing their best to keep this battle going.
They are coming at them hammer and tong. And when Fox does that, I said it's their full tilt boogie takedown dance. that's heat. So it's interesting. And you know, my point finally in that piece that's at Z on TV is that, once again, we have the emails, they're facts, but they're being spun so hard by both sides, we don't know what they say. We don't know what it means. Do they make him complicit or do they make him innocent? You know, we can't tell. That's where we are. Maybe politics has always been that way in the country, Dan, but the media hasn't been. We used to have an independent source we could trust. Now nobody cuts through sources through it and says, here's the truth of this. I'm going to talk to his staff later today, and if I get those email, if I can get those emails and talk to them, I'm going to continue on this and try to
report that. So yeah. Should John Fritzy of the Baltimore Sun Washington Bureau, too, get into that.
John's really good.
That.
Yeah,
he's
those guys good, are really
he's done
good.
Done some reporting
yeah.
already on
yes,
this,
he has.
This feud that goes on between
yes.
Cummings and Issa who cut off Cummings' microphone, remember, only last month.
That's the picture with my blog. Issa going like this.
Yeah.
Cut him off. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
David Zurawick with us, spending his this hour with us here, midday on media. We started off talking about Stephen Colbert moving into the David Letterman chair on late night on CBS. Andrew in Baltimore called in with a comment about that. Hi, Andrew. Welcome to the show.
Hey, Dan. Hey, Dave. This is Andrew Keating. How are you guys?
Oh, hi, Andrew. How are you?
Excellent, excellent. For those who don't know, Dave and I live a block away from each other. So Stephen Colbert has actually, in my opinion anyway, I don't think he's going to be such a surprise for a lot of people, largely because we've been seeing cracks in that armor of his character on Comedy Central for so long. It's not uncommon for him on that program to crack and kind of reveal his own feelings on things, you know, behind the character. But even before that, and obviously the Colbert Report is this huge shadow over everything that he had done before, but we saw him on Whose Line Is It Anyway? We saw him on a number of other comedy programs where he really was himself, a goofy, fun-loving, fast-paced guy, you know, who was quick on his feet. I think that he'll do really, really well in the situation over at CBS, and I don't think anybody's going to be surprised by how well he does.
Okay. Thank you for your comments, Andrew. Dave?
Yeah, well, I think CBS is betting a lot of money that Andrew's right about that, so they felt it, too. I have to say, I just haven't seen that much of him, you know, even in the stuff like when he went to Iraq, he was still playing Colbert, essentially.
What happened to Conan O'Brien?
He's over at TBS.
I know, but didn't he try?
He's got a monkey on his shoulder.
But didn't he try doing something, and it didn't quite work out for him? So he ended up over at TBS. Right?
Well, he got pushed out at NBC.
Yeah.
Remember
yeah.
when Jeff Zucker, the great Jeff Zucker, who's now running CNN off a cliff.
Right. Why did he get pushed out?
Because remember, they moved Jay Leno into primetime.
Oh, that's right. Brilliant. Oh, what a great move that was.
See, and look what happened. Zucker gets CNN now to go.
But Conan didn't work out because show is too mainstream and he's too weird. I love Conan, but I mean, it's.
Jay Leno was, I think, number one when he left still, but it was an old audience, you know, so they said, okay, but we're going to put him in primetime. Brilliant move, right? Disaster. I remember reporting that thing, and what I did was, because NBC was stonewalling, I would just go to all the affiliates and call them up and say, hey, how's your 10 o'clock numbers that lead into your 11 o'clock news? And the guy in Baltimore here, BAL at the time, I think was the chair of the affiliates committee, so... He barely could. He couldn't talk to me because NBC
was that.
Well, NBC was on him.
Yeah.
But I would find other stations around the country, and these general managers would be like, "What do you mean? How's it doing, Zurawick? They're killing me. I got 11 o'clock news. I got cancellations. Nobody watches me. They tune out Leno at 10 o'clock." So I just kept reporting. It was a great story.
So the problem was Leno didn't work out at 10. It wasn't a problem with Conan.
But then they moved him back.
Yeah.
And they told Conan he could go like at 12:30, 1 a.m. or some crazy stuff.
Yes.
And Conan finally took enough. You know, it took enough slaps in the face and said, I'm going to go get another job.
But do you remember how Conan did in that slot at 11:30?
He was not doing particularly well. Yeah, but don't forget, you had a chain effect. Jay bombed at 10. The local newscast did worse because Jay did worse at 10. And then the show that comes on after Jay Leno's, after the local news, is going to do worse yet. So it was a bad situation,
but he
didn't do well. You're right.
The late night over at CBS with Letterman, you know, he's a little bit weird, and he's very funny, but it's going to be you got to be kind of weird too, right? So kind of goofy. So maybe Colbert would work in that show.
I have to say, I for a long time haven't liked Letterman, and it's going to be honest. I mean, I have to be honest. I'm always getting in trouble when I do this show, by the way, and I'm honest. You give me 60 minutes with a mic and I'll kill myself.
I was a big fan. I just got tired of the show.
But his personal stuff, those situations with the interns and all that stuff, and the way that stuff really troubled me after a while with him. I just, maybe it's because I teach, but I just think that older men in power have a moral obligation to not misuse that power the way he did. And that really offended me, and I could never get past that with him. And I thought he did have kind of, with female guests, especially younger, you know, attractive, he was a weird guy. Yeah. I'm sorry. That's what he was. Yeah. It was weird. It was creepy sometimes.
Speaking of older men and younger women and abusing power, Mad Men. That's a nice transition into AMC.
That's a great one.
It is the beginning of the end of Mad Men. It's the beginning of the final season here. It started Sunday night. How did it look?
Yeah, they're going to break it into two parts like they did with Breaking Bad, so it's actually going to go on into next fall. But it's interesting because, to me, I see a shift. The storyline with Don Draper is just getting depressing, you know? And, you know, I was on a conference call with Matt Weiner, the creator, and in some ways I wondered if, it was over an hour, it's about an hour and a half, after it I thought, I wonder if Weiner really knows how to end this thing, listening to him. Because he said things like, well, you know, Megan is a classic second wife. And I thought, what does that mean, a classic? You've been in Hollywood too long where everybody gets divorced and has like six wives. What's a classic fifth wife like, you know? What do you mean a classic? And I thought, maybe there's not enough depth here to save this. And maybe it would be utterly phony to redeem Don Draper at the end of this thing. For all of a sudden, Don say, you know what matters in this life? Family, friends, and a nice little house on the lake, you know, where you can go in the summer and relax. That's not, you know, you'd say people be throwing things at the TV. They'll be, you know,
That's curious. Yeah. I wonder what people expect here.
Yes.
People who've been Mad Men fans all along, are you still hanging with let me ask the audience, are you still hanging with the show? What did you make of this first episode? Are you getting the sense from Dave that they don't know how to end this thing? Let me just give the number again, 410-662-8780. Our email address, send comments that way too, midday@wypr.org. What about the female characters,
yes,
though?
Yes, I was just going to say.
Aren't they emerging?
I was just going to say, that's the thing that redeems this. As I watched that first hour, I also thought Peggy, Elizabeth Moss' character, is going to redeem this. She's the one to watch this semester. And, you know, they say, well, you know, Draper has all this psychological Jungian depth to his character, blah, blah, blah. She doesn't have that kind of resonance. She has more. She has the sociological resonance of, in a way, representing the women's movement that started in the 60s. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a lot of thunder, a lot of emotional thunder, especially for some women who are in that audience. I think that's going to be a powerful storyline. And I think if Weiner is smart, that's how he's going to redeem the show at the end. You're going to just have to say, well, okay, I'm writing off Don, but Peggy's story really moved me.
Let's talk about a new series from FX, Dave. It debuted only last night. I was really struck by this. A TV show based on a movie, an Academy Award-winning movie from 1996, a Coen Brothers film, Fargo. This TV series starring Billy Bob Thornton, right?
Yeah.
And what do you make of this? I'm trying to think of have we had TV shows based on
Movies?
I guess we probably have. I can't think of one.
How about MASH?
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, we have.
That's right. That was a novel, then it was a movie.
We've had a lot of bad ones. They're usually bad. MASH was a good one.
Okay.
MASH was a good one. But I'll tell you what, Dan. This is funny because I got to this one. It premiered last night. I got to it Sunday, and they had sent me four episodes. And I sat down Sunday afternoon. I put one on, and I'm sitting there, and I'm thinking continuously, I'm not that impressed. It's okay. I'm not that impressed. It's okay. It's not that impressed. I look at my watch. I watched three straight episodes in a minute of fourth. And I went, when was the last time that happened?
Yeah.
This is really pretty good.
So you must have got sucked in.
It sucked me in.
Yeah.
And then I went back and started thinking about it. And it's really very good. And here's what I think in a nutshell is what separates. First of all, it's not just the downsized version of the movie at all. The Coen brothers had like a crime drama, you know, sort of true crime. And then they mixed it with their kind of dark humor, you know, which was fun. It was real. I loved the movie, you know, when it came out. The writers and producers here have turned this into a Western, like an American Western. And the frontier is the tundra out there of Minnesota.
Mm-hmm.
And Billy Bob Thornton is this almost mythic figure. You might, they even say in the press kit, you could call, some might call him a drifter. Some might call him a killer.
Sociopath.
Some might call him a trickster. And I think he is, in a way, and some might call him the devil. But that trickster thing is very powerful because we have all this American folklore, you know, of the trickster figure, particularly as you meet them in the West. Native American literature is full of trickster figures, as is Minnesota, Wisconsin, because of all the Native American tribes that are still there. So I really liked it when I started to realize what it is. And that figure, and Billy Bob Thornton, is an outstanding minimalist kind of actor.
Oh yes,
you know, and so it's good.
Is there a heroine?
You have the woman deputy in this thing, and she's,
or the chief.
Well, she's not the chief.
She's not the chief
in the first four episodes yet. I think she's going to be, but she's not. And the fascinating, and it's great because her father, who was a former cop, is now runs a diner, and so he sort of gives her advice. And so she is, if you want to look for the young hero here, it's her, and she's the hardest working of the bunch out there. So it's really got a great line of identification for women viewers, and to, you know, and incompetent men are her bosses continually. But here's what it is: Billy Bob Thornton shows the dark, capricious, nasty, how nature can just tear up the veneer of civilization in a second. And this world that the people on this frontier, with their cheery sweaters and their endless bottomless coffee cups and their church suppers and their smiles and their yahays and their you betchas and you're welcome here. Minnesota nice. All of that is the way they try to bring civilization to this horrible, really landscape, almost lunar landscape. And he's the guy who kills and does bad things.
It sounds like Fargo. Yeah. It sounds like the Coen brothers.
Well, it
so
is
they
that.
Capture
in,
that
in
aesthetic.
That vision, yes. Yeah. Good word, aesthetic.
We have an excerpt of dialogue from this new series, Fargo. This is from the first few minutes of the pilot episode. This is a conversation between the character Lester Nygaard.
Yes.
Played by Martin Freeman.
Yes, very good.
And his wife, Pearl, played by Kelly Holden Bashar.
Yes, he's a little timid insurance salesman who Billy Bob Thornton tells that he needs to step it up and not take abuse from people anymore, and that he'll help him kill some people if he wants. It's the devil. It's the devil talking to you.
Kitty said they just got one of those fancy European all-in-ones. Says it washes and dries one machine. Can you believe that?
That's in the back of Penny.
He can afford it, your brother. Kitty said he just got a big promotion after only working there a year. He said they also got one of those fancy new surround sound systems. Guess I married the wrong Nygaard.
Oh.
That's what I said. We had our good laugh.
Well, it's just slow now at the shop.
Oh, hon. That's what you always say. Slow.
Well, better get back to it.
You make your own wins. That's what Kitty said Chaz told her. Salesmen make their own wins. You gotta try harder, hun. Smile for Pete's sake. Maybe wear a nicer tie.
You gave me this tie.
Well, if you were a better salesman, I'd have bought you a nicer tie.
Ooh, Lester. So Lester's getting it from all sides.
It's all about his manhood. Yeah, he can't fix the washing machine. Yeah. He sells insurance. He has no sales.
Yeah.
They're poor. He's a small guy. His brother is much better looking, and that's who she's talking about, his sister-in-law. The brother is making money, has a happy family, and this is the wife who is really unhappy. And, yes, Lester's getting it.
Yep. So there's potential here.
It's fantastic.
Okay. All right, this is the way Midday on Media with David Zurawiec works. It's sort of like a big smorgasbord, a big buffet table,
you're getting
right?
Minnesota.
And
here.
Dave and I go down the table. We sample different things as we go. And if you're back on the first at the beginning of the table, just sampling the shrimp cocktail, we can still talk about the shrimp cocktail. So if you want to go back to talk about Letterman and Colbert, or talk about Mad Men, just hang on the line there, 410-662-8780, as we move along with the buffet here at Midday on Media with David Zurawiec. We got to talk about Laura Ingraham going to ABC News too, as well as we got to hear from David about the Netflix series House of Cards and its production in Maryland. A short break. We'll be right back. Welcome back. Dan Roderick's here with David Zerwick from the Baltimore Sun. A couple of emails to read. Ann says, what Stephen Colbert does best is pretend to do a serious interview while making the interviewee look like a fool. Not a great talent in my estimation, nor uplifting entertainment. He is not David Letterman's equal and won't do well in that position. But again, that's Stephen Colbert playing that role on Comedy Central. It remains to be seen how he'll conduct interviews. Although, since you're built that way, what did I say yesterday? This is like trying to get, a fastballer, Nolan Ryan, to suddenly become a knuckleball pitcher. It might be that difficult for him to break out of that character. It's going to be interesting.
It's a difficult tone too, because we now live in this age of intense irony and postmodernism, and so as you do an interview, you have to mock the interview as
Snark.
You do. Yes. Mm-hmm. And I hate that, but it's where most of the young or audience is at. So deal with it.
Kelly writes in to thank you, David Zerwick, for reminding us about David Letterman's abuse of power with an intern on the show. It's always struck me as odd that he stayed on the air and that people watched after that.
Yeah.
Back to the phone lines. Robert in Baltimore wants to make a comment about David Letterman. Robert, welcome to the show.
Hey, good afternoon. I guess it's not morning anymore. Geez, I'm going to back this up a little bit and go back to Johnny Carson. In that, I was born in Nebraska, and I've been a Marylander for 32 years. And affectionately, during the day, even into the 70s, the Nebraskans called Johnny affectionately the asshole from Nebraska. And this is Nebraskan stuff, but he had this thing, and he basically created the format for, I'm sure he had writers and oozcads of help, but he was the front man for the format for The Tonight Show. And in my estimation, of all the guys that have kind of posted in the middle, I think Letterman did the strongest job of playing with what Johnny set up and then bringing him his own character to it. And I'm actually looking forward to Colbert. I don't know if he can get off of his irreverent shtick, but in part, there is sort of a studied irreverence about those interviews that Johnny did, that David did, and I really hope, that Colbert can pick up the baton and run with it.
Yeah, I don't think the question is we like irreverence in all of that. It's not whether he can be irreverent; it's whether he can actually be himself and not that character, which is satirical.
Yeah,
right.
No, I agree. I agree with Robert about this though. That Carson absolutely set the template. He's the archetype for this. I mean, you can go back to Jack. I love Jack Parr. But Jack Parr didn't have the kind of success Jack Parr was sitting there with his German Shepherd being forced off of television, having a nervous breakdown on TV, which I love. That's one of my great 10 best TV moments. But Johnny set the template, was the archetype of this. And David Letterman, as much as anybody, had a reverence for that, and did respect that and did try to carry on that tradition.
Right.
It's like somebody who admired a great ball player and tried to carry on some of what that ball player before him did. So I agree with that. I agree that Letterman was good in that sense. And for a long time, he was, I think, the class of the field. I don't think that was the case lately.
You could even trace that Letterman line back to Ernie Kovacs.
Go
look up Ernie Kovacs
if you're not
familiar with him. There's a lot of that shtick on late night. I think some of it was pioneered by Ernie Kovacs even before Johnny Carson.
Yes, and Kovacs was a subversive figure. He blew up the medium even as very, very far ahead of his time in that sense. Yeah.
Here's Bernadette calling us from Glenarm with a comment about Mad Men. Hi, Bernadette.
Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
And I just would like David to know I really enjoy listening to his updates about the new programs that are coming on and also his comments about the present day and the former programs. I watched the Mad Men series on DVDs, and at times it was very difficult, and I'd even look to see if a DVD had been skipped. They would jump around so... with the storyline. And the longer I've watched it, I kept thinking to myself, I see no resolution in this show. I don't know how they were going to end it. And when it came on Sunday night, Selfridge and Bletchley Circle came on Maryland Public Television, and there's no way that I'm going to watch anything but Selfridge and Bletchley Circle. Well, I don't care what else is on. I tell my family, do not call me on Sunday evening. I am not going to answer the phone because I am just glued to their masterpiece shows on Sunday.
So the longer, Bernard, that the more you watched Mad Men, the less
it
you just, liked it, sort
it,
of.
Yeah. I just kept not making any sense to me.
Okay. Yeah.
And I don't know, the storyline just kept dragging on and on, and it just jumped around so much that.
Okay. You know, Bernadette and Dave, I saw a tweet yesterday from someone, I can't remember who said this, that the TV series, there's such a long gap between the end of one season and the beginning of another one. They can't remember where they left off, or they just can't remember all the storylines in it in them sometimes.
By the way, if you like Brit drama, Bletchley.
Bletchley's,
it's really good.
That's the one she mentioned.
Yes, it's excellent.
All right.
Second part. They had a series last year, first part of it. Wonderful. Really,
and that's Sunday nights.
Yeah, Sunday nights on PBS.
John in Mount Washington with a comment about Don Draper, the lead character in Mad Men. Hi.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
Yeah, I guess in short is that, with any piece, you know, there's always what they call the character arc, which you guys are familiar with, and most of your audience, you know, you start out from strength and you go to weakness and vice versa. And at the same time, with John Hamm having so much success because of this character and also being offered other movie roles, it's not surprising there would be some degree of disjointment in the storyline. And combine that with the fact that even if you do pick up the story from where you left off, the question is, where does it make sense in the overall theme of the story itself? Because you may start out not knowing where you want to end up, but you know where you don't want to go. And even if you do take that path, the question then is, do you just leave it into the realm of Dox Meus, you know, the realms of the gods, so to speak, and let it play itself out? So there's some degree of ambivalence in the sense of where it's going. Now, for me personally, I don't mind that because I think it does push the characters. I think for the audience, it gets a little distressing because we want to see our characters definitive. Either they're this or they're that. And I think for actors, and again, as you guys know from interviewing them, they sometimes not only like that, but at the same time, they also kind of restricted by it. So they have an opportunity to push that character a little differently. Now, whether or not the audience will be favorable to that is another question. So I think at this point in the script, you know, it'll be hard to say how it'll end up or why it'll end up because of it, but I do think it's an interesting process to watch. I think, again, as fans, we have a tendency to kind of fall into a lulled state of what we want things to be, but I think, again, for actors and performers, and as well as time constraint, they themselves may bring their own interpretation, because over time, these actors do become producers on some of these very series, and they themselves may take it in another direction. I mean, and in brief, I'll hang up here after this. Look at the show Justified, love it or hate it. I mean, I enjoy it. But with Elmore Leonard passing, if they come back with that, how do they continue to write in the same vein and at the same time not wind up copying or regurgitating old scripts in the name of saying they're writing new stories and at the same time take a new path but still in the same spirit of? So it's a bit of a challenge for any writer as well as a performer to go forward on that.
I agree. It is a huge challenge. My problem, I think the complicating factor on Don Draper for Matt Weiner and the writers was they started out with this deep kind of dark character. I call him Existential Don, you know, and I loved that character. Then they found out not just a whole new audience, and I think it was mainly a younger audience, which advertisers like, but they found a whole audience for Don as sort of a magazine cover boy because of John Hamm's looks. And if they put him in the Brooks Brothers suits, you know, and then in the bed, and then in the Brooks Brothers suits.
It was retro chic.
Yeah, yes, that's people it. Like there that. You go. Yeah. Thank you. That's the term. Yeah. They could get Banana Republic and all these people buying ads and doing contests with them. Yeah. And they all of a sudden got a pretty good audience bump with that extra audience. And they went that way. Only that guy's got to be a lot more superficial. He's got to move from good suits to the bar to bed to, right. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
And then they lost track of Existential Don. I think the last season and this season are trying to chase down Existential Don again. It's a little complicated.
It is complicated. Yes. More than a little complicated. I agree with John on that. Hey, a couple other stories that we promised we'd talk about here. I want to get your comments on Laura Ingraham, the syndicated radio talk show host, very, very conservative. Every time I've tuned in, It seems like she's bashing immigrants, undocumented workers in the United States. Seems to be one of her favorite things to do. Very, very conservative, Laura Ingraham, going to ABC News as part of their This Week lineup with George Stephanopoulos. So she'll be contributing there. She's also a Fox contributor.
Yeah, you know, that's kind of, in a way, there's a couple things. One, being a contributor and being on a Sunday show is not that much. I mean, you know, I did it with Reliable Sources, but I couldn't take money because I write about them. Mm-hmm. You know, they just give them some money. It's not that much. But you're absolutely right about the principle of the thing. This is a commentator who is really quite nasty in her commentary. I mean, when you start doing voices that you say are immigrant voice, you know,
people who speak with broken English.
Start trying to make fun of people that way. Yeah. That to me is really nasty, down and dirty stuff. And here's the game. Here's the game. It's plain as the nose on our faces. ABC is really making a run at NBC in terms of ratings. I think ABC has a much better news product, but everybody has a better news product than NBC News, if you ask me. But they think that if they can get a little piece of that conservative audience watching Fox, they're like, bang, we're first place. You know, CNN tried it with Eric Erickson, the blogger. And then and when they hired him, they put him on, I can't remember what show it was. Oh, it was John King's show. The John King show that was canceled quickly. But they pull out on Eric Erickson, who's really a pretty nasty blogger. Fortunately, I think Media Matters went after him and went back through his columns as they did with her.
Yeah.
And they had the
They pull out of these quotes. Yeah. Why do you have a conservative voice on the air, but why does it have to be this extreme?
And then they have to apologize for it. Yeah. But they think they can get away with it with ratings. It's money. The answer to every question in TV, hopefully more money. That's what they're after.
David, back here in Maryland, how did we wrap up with the funding or the tax breaks for the House of Cards production in the
Fascinating
state?
Story right now. They're supposed to only be $3.5 million apart, blah, blah, blah. I'm hearing from all kinds of sources, and I'm hearing all kinds of stuff, some of it crazy. I'm going to keep writing about this. Some people say, oh, Georgia wants them. Georgia will pay moving expenses. Pittsburgh wants them. Pittsburgh will play moving expenses. I had two people I thought were really good sources. One said, oh, they're going to Atlanta. The other guy said, no, they're not going to Atlanta. Atlanta's got too much work. They don't have a crew that they can give them. They're going to Pittsburgh. Here's my bottom line. I think if they have to move, Dan, they're going to be so late. They're not going to make February of next year giving episodes to Netflix. I don't think Netflix, after creating this brilliant way to release this series, I don't think they're going to stomach that. I think it's too late for them to move whether or not they get the $3.5 million. But I think they have made such a debacle of public relations. They have so insulted the people of Maryland and not just the legislature, but I think they've even insulted O'Malley. I haven't heard from him. I have no evidence from him on this, but I think they've insulted him. And he made this state a pretty welcome place for them initially. I think they stay here this year because they have to, and then they say, Maryland, you're dead to me. We're going next year. They start making it. But the real money they spent is not in sets, because some of those you have to tear down anyway for storyline. Real money is in those warehouses out there in Joppa. Those were big old drafty, nasty warehouses.
Big investment.
They insulated them. They put it, soundproofed them. The electricity in there, the new electricity, the new heating, air conditioning, millions and millions they're going to eat when they lose it. And you know what? For the arrogance that they've shown, I don't have one tear for those guys from MRC. I do for the workers here. I care about the workers here.
Huh? It doesn't sound like you think it's going
to
happen.
Honest to God, I don't know. If they move, they're doing it for spite now. Economically, it doesn't make sense. Next year, it will.
David Zerowick is media critic of the Baltimore Sun. He writes the Z on TV blog that you can find at baltimoresun.com. He joins us here on Midday, on the third Wednesday of every month. Am I right?
Yes.
Is today the third Wednesday already?
This is the third Wednesday already.
Thank you for being here, Dave.
I love it.
Yeah,
I just
it was a pleasure.
Hour flies by with this. Great, great callers.
And thank you, everybody, for contributing to the show today and just listening. Have a great afternoon. Enjoy this spring-like weather, and we'll see you again soon.
Midday's senior producer is Nikki Gamer. The producer and director is Jonathan Ahrens. The associate producer, Michael Hemowitz. Our interns are Luke Spicknell, James Daly, Tom Cartaxo, and Michelle Richardson. Music produced by Jeff Truman and High Gravity Sounds. Midday podcasts and live streaming available at WYPR.org. Dan Roderick's column appears in the Baltimore Sun. This is WYPR, your NPR news station.